We get things underway by welcoming back to the program, he's the smartest guy, the best writer in the country, and maybe our favorite guest every time he comes on, David Roth, joining us this afternoon. Hello, Mr. Roth.
Hi. Smartest guy and best writer in the country is modest. Thank you for setting the expectations nice and low.
I like to do that. I like to set you up for success here, David. That's what we do.
Although, how are you doing, man?
Carrie and I were talking earlier, and we're worried, and we don't know what the term is. It's not Stockholm Syndrome, but we're worried that, you know, it's like in those movies when the investigator gets so deep inside the serial killer's head that they begin to identify with them. And I'm going to say we might be a little bit worried about you.
I'm going to William Peterson in Manhunter.
Yeah, that's the movie. Yeah. Yes.
I would really, honestly, he looked great in those weird 80s shorts. He pulled off the stubble a lot better than I did. I think everybody could stand to be a little bit more William Peterson in Manhunter. Maybe not with Trump, but I don't know. I wrote another thing about him this week and everything. I'm trying to take breaks from that because it's like, I'm inside all the time. Everything sucks outside in New York right now. So I just need to find a way to not think about stuff that makes me upset every day.
Oh, well, so what are we going to talk about then?
I have no idea, dude. I don't know what's going on in baseball right now. Yeah, I mean, of course I can do it. It's not like I'm trying and actually succeeding are two very, very different things.
Well, let's do a little bit of that, and then we'll move on to other things, because your piece in the New Republic is fantastic, as always. Trump finds his own dumb, endless war, and I think the bottom line is, as you have told us time and time again, don't ascribe anything to this guy in terms of a plan, that he's like a goldfish, every day is a new day.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously not ideal under the best of circumstances, which, even those who don't really follow the news very closely surely know these are not. It's just, it's really strange to be, I think the part of it, the real disjunction for me, like I have written it a bunch of times, there's only so many things to say about him. He's not a very complicated man. But to be here now, with the city the way that it is, and to see sort of the country the way that it is, and to just know that, like, the plan to reopen the economy or whatever the branding attempt is now, I think he's bored. It's exactly what it looks like. Like, the man wants to go back and play golf again and watch the stock market go up again, although I guess it never really went down. That is the way that, like, a little kid would feel about having to be in the house all day. Like, I understand it, like, and I can empathize with it way more than I can usually empathize with this stuff. But there's something about seeing how high the stakes are and seeing how incapable of, not just like, appreciating that, because he's not a guy that appreciates things that have to do with other people, but just seeing how unable he is to sort of grasp the significance of this in any way is really, it makes you feel kind of crazy sometimes, at least for me. I mean, I don't know how, I know it's different in Maine than it is in New York right now, but just the way that the city is, sirens every day, I mean, it sucks. It's scary. And to see how abstracted the policy response to it has been and how insufficient, it's really, it's strange. You look at your screen and you look out the window and they just don't seem to belong on the same planet.
And if you had an opposition party, that would be one thing. But as you point out in this piece, the Democrats, at least the Democrats in Congress, have been far too willing to go along and essentially agree, at least with the premise that this is a war and he's a wartime president and we're all in this together, when they could certainly be approaching it in a far different way.
It's maddening. It is really maddening because, at this point, I think that, everybody sort of knows what to expect from Trump, and some people get excited when he pushes the one button that he knows how to push, and some people get mad. But the inability, I mean, certainly I think that just Congress having screwed off because they are like the one group of people on earth that can't consent to use Zoom like everybody else is really kind of disappointing. But the way that they're approaching it, I mean, I think there's a real sort of like learned helplessness with that party that I think has been evident for a very long time. But again, as you said, like the stakes are extremely high here. And even if you are not doing it to try to score election year points, which, I mean, I'm not super partisan where that is concerned, but like I wouldn't be averse to scoring some election year points on a guy that's screwing up at this level. But just to see the inability to sort of like, I don't know, get a little mad, try a little bit harder, like any of this stuff is just, I don't know. I mean, again, I feel like I'm sort of uncharacteristically having a hard time putting all of this into, you know, I can usually sort of joke around about it. It really is enraging to me in a way that, you know, made the piece hard to write, makes the day sort of hard to get by. I find myself missing West Coast NBA games a lot. Like games I don't even care about, games that air on TNT, you know, that I can just watch at 10:30 for 1 hour before going to bed. I had no idea how important those were to my emotional well-being. So the combination of those not being there and then also a plague happening has really done a number on me, if I'm being honest.
I mean, is it fair to say that the congressional Democrats have sort of ceded their opposition to the Democratic governors around the country?
It absolutely seems like that. And I guess in some ways that's, you know, we've seen some good performances from those governors, some of them like good TV performances, as with ours, you know, in New York, coupled to a less good governmental performance. But there's been a lot of other really excellent work. The idea that that Congress seems to have that the important thing is to sort of get out of the way and, you know, let Trump screw this up for himself. I think in some ways, strategically, I guess I can see that. But governors are not the only people that should be governing right now. And to see the way that the federal benefit stuff has worked out is so, it's a strange sort of feeling. I mean, obviously, as I said, it bothers me. There's also something kind of embarrassing about seeing how insufficient the ability of states to respond to stuff like this is. I mean, obviously, like historic joblessness claims and all that stuff, you can see that would put some sort of strain on the state, even if the state hadn't been hollowed out, sort of by both sides working at different paces over the years. But the CARES Act, I guess they call it, whatever the big sort of bailout thing, and then all of the stuff that's sort of come on behind it, is like it just has this feeling of atrophy. Like that it's clear that in some ways, like they understand that a great deal of money needs to be spent, and yet they just can't bring themselves to spend it on actual people, small businesses, like the people that are actually at risk in all of this. And that is really, you know, it's very frustrating. My wife works from home. You know, obviously everybody works from home now, but I have, you know, she's been working many hours with these nonprofits that she works with, many of whom are facing, you know, effectively existential threats because of the fact that, you know, they can't provide their services. You know, a lot of times it's services in schools or it's services for addicts, and, you know, people just can't be together right now. And to see her sort of trying to walk these different organizations through this, the PPP loan process, which just ran out of money yesterday. It's excruciating to watch because like everybody's doing their best. The program was very badly designed and very badly implemented, and it didn't have enough money. And you can see what the stakes of that are going to be. Like, and if I can see it, and I'm a dunce, like all I do is complain about the Mets and go on your radio show once a month. Like that's really, those are my areas of expertise. And it still is like, gosh, I mean, if I could see it, it makes you wonder why Nancy Pelosi couldn't.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. In the world of the surreal, there's a new chapter seemingly every day. And the fact that among the people advising the president on how to reopen the country are those great thinkers, Vince McMahon and Dana White.
Ah, so good. It's, I mean, really good. It's a very classic sort of Trumpy thing where he'll go into the Rose Garden, you know, on some day when thousands of otherwise mostly preventable deaths occurred. And then he just like reads the list of CEOs that he like thinks he, you know, are doing a good job and helping him out. And in general, that's kind of embarrassing, you know, just like a bunch of kind of doughy guys that all look like, if you were trying to, you know, football games don't let you do this, but if like Madden let you create a player, but you could do it for like an offensive coordinator, that's what all the different videos behind them look like, where you're just like sort of moving the slider around various shades of pink. But then Vince McMahon and Dana White are different because they lift weights than the average CEO. And yet, like, also quite possibly worse. Like, I don't have a great deal of faith in the guy that, like, you know, whoever FedEx's CEO is. But, man, like, I'm much more familiar with Vince McMahon's work. And WWE getting designated an essential business in the state of Florida is one of those things that, like, if someone had told me that I had tweeted that as a joke at, like, you know, 1 a.m. 3 years ago, I would not be surprised. And yet, that's where, whatever, that happened 3 days ago, I guess, in real life.
Crazy times indeed. Well, let's move on to other stuff here. Let's talk about some of the good things happening. All right, maybe not that good, but did you watch any of the NBA? Did you watch any of the horse competition?
Very little. I did watch some because I am, you know, jonesing for sports pretty badly. I was one of my former coworkers mentioned on Slack earlier that he's just watching highlight videos of like high school sophomores now. Like, we're all drinking the dregs. Like, this, it's not what you want. I did watch a little bit of the horse thing. I think that the issue with it, and I think that this is something that anybody that's gotten to an NBA game or even a D-League game early can appreciate, is that unguarded professional players basically never miss. So there's really only so much drama that can be sort of built into it. That, like, right. Chauncey Billups is, you know, not in NBA shape or whatever, but he's going to make 90% of the shots that he takes. He's Chauncey Billups, and that'll be true when he's 70. But, I mean, I appreciated the effort. I think that this is the only time in my life I've ever been excited to watch golf on television, because apparently the PGA is coming back in June. Like, the bar has been lowered to the point where I will take pretty much whatever is being offered.
You'll appreciate this, and maybe a few other people, but I'm, you know, looking for something to do, entertain my six-year-old at home, and I thought, you know, what did I like doing at that age? And we've gone through every board game in the house a couple of times, and I thought, I know what I'll do. Is he too young to introduce him to Strat-O-Matic baseball? Do you remember that? Oh, did you ever play that?
Yes, absolutely played it. And that is what a nice thing to be able to do with a kid. I mean, like, I loved it. And there's an idea. So people that are listening maybe know it, maybe don't, but it's a dice game. You get these cards with a series of outcomes, and then depending on the roll of the dice, you know, you find out what happened. And it's all based on actual statistics, ostensibly. There's the worst thing that can happen on a batter's card is, I remember the phrase distinctly because it's like stayed in circulation with my friends, ground out into as many outs as possible.
Possible, yes.
Which is like, basically, you know, just building in that possibility that if you roll like triple snake eyes, then congratulations, you hit into a triple play. And I was never been in a game where anybody got a ground out into as many outs as possible. But that's always been the term for me whenever, like, the maximum screwed up situation that you can be in is always that. Well, what, can I ask what edition you're playing with? Well, is this a contemporary one?
I haven't played with him yet because it took me a while to find a game. And when I found it, the set of cards that were in there were from the early 80s.
Yeah, that's
and I thought of you immediately because
kids. We're all 10 years out of date too.
Well, I thought of you and I said, here are some guys, Ellis Valentine, Wally Bachman, they're back.
That's great. I mean, I think that's it's certainly the only way to get like a kid to really care about Lyman Bostock is to have him somehow like it matter what a dice tells you he does.
Right, to see that if you roll one and then get anything from 5 through 11, he's on base that year.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that so for the ones that we had, and I played with my friends into high school, and I remember like the cards that we had were well out of date. And I remember it was like that summer. One summer, you know, while we were in college, we got together and like we were like old enough to drink beer, so we were like, oh, maybe this is how you're supposed to play the game. And we like drafted teams and played a couple of times. And I remember bringing the team home and finding it in my room where I grew up, like years later. And it was, I had like Cecil Espy and Ellis Burks, all these guys I just really legit hadn't thought about in a really long time.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a very pure, you don't get to like just open a pack of baseball cards from your youth very often, but finding that and then like realizing that I had actually cared about all of it, it was kind of a nice feeling in some ways.
Absolutely.
Well, that's Proustian, but like, whatever the dumber version of that is.
And what's going on in the world of Hallmark movies?
That's a great question. this has been the thing that we have tried to keep going like normal, the Hallmark movie podcast that I do with the writer Jeb Lund. And we've been watching stuff. I would say that it hasn't been quite as therapeutic as I'd hoped, mostly because the movies haven't been that good. We did watch one that I very much enjoyed that had one of the male leads from the show iZombie in it. Not a lot of people will know or care about that, but he did a terrific job. But we watched one recently that was set in Portland. Wow. And just in the description, it involved is, you know, a writer goes to Portland to finish his book and falls in love or whatever. And I was excited because my wife is from Portland, Maine. And I just assumed, because Hallmark kind of has a thing for Maine a little bit. I mean, obviously they shoot them all in Canada, but sometimes you need to have someplace rustic. And so I was excited and I told her and she was like, oh, I'll watch it with you. And it was clear within the first few minutes that it was actually Portland, Oregon, and not Portland, Maine. And like, I'm not going to say it's the angriest that I've seen her, but it was, she was not pleased. And we feel like, oh, this is insulting. Come on. Because at the beginning, there's this talk about we're going to the cabin in Portland. And she's like, my cabin in Portland. Actually, your Maine. Like, she got over it by leaving the room.
Like everything else these days, it ends up being
right.
Disappointing and frustrating and makes you want to leave the room.
Yeah, yeah, it's only so much you can do. I don't blame Hallmark for that one. That's circumstances.
Well, listen, if it makes you feel any better, your occasional senator, Susan Collins, is very concerned right now.
It seems like she's really been very concerned.
Yes.
I was noticing that she'd seemed concerned. I've been fascinated by her poll numbers.
Oof.
She's an institution. I guess it's really kind of nice to know that. And again, I know it's not a fait accompli that she loses the election or whatever. It's all kinds of bad things happen all the time. But the idea of somebody that had seemed like she just would hold that job forever, everyone in the state getting sick of her at the same time, is really kind of remarkable to watch. Like the little graph of her approval rating is like, it's like when they show those probability outcomes for football games that a team blows. It's like the Super Bowl that the Falcons coughed up the lead to the Patriots. Where it's like a graph that looks like one thing, and then it's abruptly just like, ooh, patient has died. That's kind of like what we're looking at there.
I have a really bad habit of yelling at the TV, or at least grumbling at the TV, especially with Collins lately. And I knew that something had happened with Collins when usually my wife will just sort of sigh at me and go, they can't hear you. Collins' ad came on. During the nightly news, and she was the one that sort of went, oh, not this again.
Yeah, it just feels like, I mean, for all of us, this is the thing I keep coming back to, is that everybody's still kind of just acting like it's normal when things are clearly not. And Collins' stuff in general has just been like, I mean, it's been clearly insufficient to this moment from, you know, the incident that Trump came on the scene. It's just clear that, like, he and Susan Collins can't be in the same party. Like, one of them is going to have to be different, and it's not going to be Donald Trump. And she doesn't know how to do that.
Right.
But I can't imagine how infuriating it would be to have somebody talking about, you know, comity and decency and working together and stuff like that. And then to just know that on some other channel, this like big pink ogre is yelling about what a good job he's doing and how TV won't tell you that he's secretly doing a great job. Like, one of you guys needs to get with the program.
Ain't that America right there? David Roth, read his newest in the New Republic entitled Trump Finds His Own Dumb Endless War. Brilliant as always, David. Appreciate it. When this ends, we'll get together. We'll have some beers. We'll play a little Stratomatic.
I'm looking forward to it, man. Anything on the other side of this is sounding great to me, but that sounds like.
All right. Thank you, David. Stay safe.
Thanks. Now have a good one, guys.
David Roth with us on Downtown.